Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, and thanks to our new title sponsor, Spire Academy Lacrosse. Spire is an international high school and post-grad sports performance training and education boarding school located within a world-class event and wellness complex. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast. As we head towards the last week of the regular season, there are a few conferences that will start tournament play this weekend prior to championship week, which concludes on Sunday, May 5th, with the NCAA selection show. There'll be 9 automatic qualifiers and 8 at-large selections on that Sunday night, as we'll set up the bracket, which will structure the entire month of May. Last weekend was terrific. I was at Homewood Field for a very, very defensive struggle between Maryland and Johns Hopkins. I think the story of the day was the weather and the crowd, over 10,000 fans. And that's a week after Army and Navy saw a similar 10,000 fans in Mikey Stadium. Right now, the rankings matter very little. What really matters is the RPI and the playoff resumes that are being built. And when I boil this down this week, it looks to me as if 5 teams have a strong enough resume right now to warrant being hosts in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And those 5 would be Notre Dame, Duke, Johns Hopkins, Denver, and Syracuse. Even with a loss over the next week or two, probably unlikely that those teams would drop below the 8th spot. Maybe Syracuse could. But I think right now, if you're putting this tournament on paper 2 weeks in advance, I come up with those 5 teams as quote-unquote lock hosts. The next group of teams is going to be the winner of the Maryland semifinal game in the Big Ten tournament. And let's face facts, Penn State is favored to win their game over Rutgers this weekend. If it is Penn State-Maryland, I think the winner of that game probably would warrant a seed somewhere in the 5-8 range. They also would be the Ivy League champion. Paul Carcaterra, Chris Cotter, and myself will be covering the Ivy League tournament. Right now, it appears as if it's going to be at Cornell, barring a massive upset by Dartmouth. Cornell is at Dartmouth this Saturday. If they win, they host the tournament. And I think the Ivy League champ, whether it be Cornell, Yale, or if Princeton or Penn were to go on a run, I think the Ivy League champ is going to be seated also, somewhere probably in the 6-8 range. And then Virginia. You know, the Cavaliers have a 2-game losing streak right now, having lost a 1-goal game last weekend in the Dome. Their defense has been struggling. They've given up 36 goals over their last 2 games. Virginia now hosts Notre Dame. Okay, if they lose that game, that's a 3-game losing streak. And then they have the ACC tournament. So Virginia is positioned to host a first-round game, but it's not a lock yet. They're certainly in the mix. The bubble this year looks like it's going to be Ivy League teams 2 and 3 against Big East team number 2. Right now, that would be Georgetown. So we're talking about Georgetown and a Yale or Cornell, Georgetown and a Penn. There's really not many teams who are vying for that final at-large slot, which is a little unusual. Again, the selection show is Sunday, May 5th. This will work itself out over this weekend and next weekend with Champ Week. The schedule this week is really different in that we have a lot of Friday games, okay? And the key games on Friday to keep your eyes on are in the Patriot League. Colgate and BU square off, Navy and Bucknell, Lafayette and Lehigh, and Loyola is hosting Army at 7 o'clock on CBS Sports. Evan Washburn, who's our guest here on this podcast in a few moments, will be calling that game with Dave Ryan live from Baltimore. And it's a big game. The 6 teams for the Patriot League tournament have been determined. The seedings have not been. And if you know anything about that tournament, it's a 1-week format with a quarterfinal midweek, a semifinal, and then a final. And so it's really taxing for those teams who are come in at the quarterfinal level. It really favors the number 1 or number 2 seed. The other games to watch this weekend, outside of the Patriot League, in the ACC, we got Notre Dame at Virginia. That's an ESPN2 game on Saturday. As I said, Notre Dame comes in on a little bit of a win streak. Their offense is playing really, really well, passing the ball. If you watch their highlights against North Carolina, the ball movement was superb. They tightened up the defense a week after giving up all sorts of goals to Cornell. Facing a Virginia team, two-game losing streak. Midfield scoring has been a question mark. Defensive strategy has to be reevaluated. I think that's a team that could play a pretty effective zone defense. We'll see. They've got the length down low. They just don't have the number of shorties necessary to play up-tempo style defense. And whatever they're doing right now, when you get them sliding, it's kind of a mess. Chris Cotter and Clark will be at Klockner Stadium. That'll be a good one. ESPNU, 2 o'clock on Saturday. The other thing going on this week, two things you want to keep your eye on. ESPN Plus, so many of these good games are on ESPN Plus. And then the ACC Women's Tournament kicks off all week long from Charlotte, North Carolina. That's going to be on the ACC Network. Saturday's games that I will have an eye on, aside from the game I am covering at noon, I've got Duke at North Carolina, noon on the ACC Network. The other game Saturday of magnitude, and in my eyes, there are four really big games. Obviously, Michigan and Ohio State quarterfinal Big Ten game is essential. Okay, that's a playoff game. And you think about the NCAA tournament being 16 teams. Well, extend that bracket now to three levels. And Michigan and Ohio State are playing in an outer game bracket for the NCAA tournament. The same goes for Rutgers as they travel to Penn State, Panzer Stadium, to play the Nittany Lions. The games in the Ivy League I mentioned, Cornell controls their destiny. They're at Dartmouth. They're a strong favorite in that game. The game to watch for me is Yale and Princeton. We'll see what happens. Princeton put together a really nice game last week. Michael Gianforcaro, wow, what a play. The speed of that goaltender on that coast-to-coast run was just blinding. Unbelievable how good the goalie play has been this year, both in the net and out of the net. And then two games that really intrigue me. A-10, you got Richmond and St. Joe's. CAA, you got Delaware and Towson. Okay, both of those games could be previews of a league championship just next week. So we'll see how that shakes down. Richmond and St. Joe's in the A-10, Delaware and Towson. Next week, again, Selection Sunday, 9 automatic qualifiers out of leagues. When we spin the dial here, look around the America East, Albany is in good position right now. You got UMBC, Vermont, Binghamton, and Bryant challenging. Bryant took the AQ last year and then lost a home playoff game at Homewood Field against Johns Hopkins. The A-Sun looks like a three-team race, Jacksonville, Utah, and Air Force. Jacksonville still trying to get over the top. Utah was the league champion a year ago. A-10, as I said, it's Richmond and St. Joe's. Don't forget about High Point. High Point can rise up and maybe reverse one of those regular season losses in the tournament, in the league tournament for John Torpy. Big East looks like a two-team race. I mean, it looks like Denver and Georgetown. Georgetown had a lead at Denver, I think that was 2 weeks ago, and kind of fizzled. I don't know if it was the altitude or the Denver defense. And suddenly the Pioneers just shutting everybody down, holding everyone below 10 goals apiece. The Big Ten seems like three teams can win it, Hopkins, Maryland, or Penn State. As I said, CAA looks like Towson, Delaware. Ivy, wide open. Cornell, Yale, Princeton, and Penn. Likely Cornell's a host. I actually booked my travel already to Ithaca. Maybe that's the hex. Maybe that's the kiss of death for Cornell. Looks like we'll be up there next Thursday to watch games, the Ivy League semifinals on Friday and the championship on Sunday. MAC, the tournament is established. Sacred Heart and LIU are the top two seeds. And then the Patriot League, previously discussed, and we'll get into this with Evan Washburn here in a moment. There's six teams. We know they're in the tournament, but the teams are vying now for slotting. Who gets a bye as a first and second seed, and who has to play in the quarterfinals. The game to watch, again, Friday night, Army at Loyola. Should be a good one. The status of Will Colletti, Army Fogo, is in question. Not sure if he's game to game or out a week. He didn't play last week. They got good faceoff play. But that certainly would swing in Loyola's favor because the Greyhounds have struggled in the faceoff department. Now, don't look now, but Charlie Toomey and the Hounds have won 5 straight games. That's a team that plays a very, very difficult non-conference schedule. They've found a second wind. And they're going to give that's a really, really cool game. I'll be in the air flying to Raleigh-Durham
on Friday night and Friday afternoon, so I'll miss that game live. But if you're in Baltimore, that's a game worth watching. Loyola student section always shows up, and Army certainly is going to bring the juice. So that's the weekend. Don't forget about the ACC Women's Tournament going on all week on the ACC Network. And I hope to see everybody on Saturday. Again, I'm at Duke, North Carolina at noon, ACC Network. We'll hand things off to a Kark and Cotter at Klockner Stadium for a 2 o'clock game between Virginia and Notre Dame, a game the Cavaliers really need if they're going to turn this thing around. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, my email is quint.kesnick@espn.com. Anytime you want to send me a note about content, please do so. I appreciate everybody listening. And I'm really excited to welcome in our guest, Evan Washburn. Evan played defense at Delaware. He's a guy I've worked alongside now for 15 years covering what was the old MLL, and now it's the PLL. We also cover some high school events during the summer, the Naptown Challenge. Evan and I both live in Baltimore, and so we see each other frequently. He's got a young son, Hudson, who's 8 years old, who started his lacrosse journey. Evan's just a super nice guy, and he's had massive success in the television industry, working for CBS, covering the NFL, big-time NFL football games, including multiple Super Bowls. He gets to cover the March Madness, the tournament on CBS, and then some lacrosse action in the spring. So eager to talk to Evan. Again, thanks for listening, and have a great week, everybody. Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Spire Lacrosse. Spire's world-class high school and post-grad lacrosse programs are ideal for serious lacrosse players looking for an intense training environment to prepare for the next level of competition. The academies provide student athletes the chance to study, train, and compete in world-class athletic and academic facilities while seeking the best possible college scholarship opportunities. Quintessential Podcast welcomes in friend of the show and CBS Sports personality, television star, former University of Delaware defender Evan Washburn is our guest this week from his humble abode in Baltimore, Maryland. We're both in Maryland right now. Welcome in, Evan. It's been quite a couple months for you.
Yeah, Q. First of all, great to be with you, man. Always good to talk to you. Love catching up. It's been, I often say, it's like you're on that treadmill at football seasons at a certain pace that's predictable. Then post Super Bowl, the pace becomes less predictable and at times increases maybe beyond what you're comfortable running on. And then all of a sudden it comes to a pretty quick grinding halt. And then there's a different level of pace and workout when it comes to lacrosse season for me.
Yeah. And your football schedule, very different from mine or Kark's, let's say, or even Anish who covers college football, because our January after the New Year's Day bowls, our January is really light. Yours actually accelerates at that point and into February. What were some of your takeaways of covering some of these playoff games, whether it was the Ravens or the Chiefs?
Yeah, I'll start with the Baltimore Ravens, just because, as you mentioned, that's our backyard, probably a lot of your listeners from this area. And for me, it's always, I would say, unique to cover that team because, one, you grow up. I wasn't a huge fan, but obviously I appreciated the team, especially that first Super Bowl. My first job in media was working for Comcast Sportsnet in the production assistant level and kind of a gopher, if you will, running around, low level guy. But I was around the Ravens a lot and I got to see what it was like to cover a team on a day-to-day basis, that beat mentality. And that kind of took some of the fandom out, but it got me closer to the organization. And then as I graduated on to being at CBS, obviously there are times when I will get assigned a Ravens game. Living here, I still do some stuff for the team on their media side, whether it's hosting shows or hosting events. So I'm kind of intimately aware. And I don't know about you, Q, as you've gotten closer with certain teams or you know guys, it can sometimes make it more challenging to kind of devoid yourself from what you're there to do. And this year I found that because the Ravens were arguably the best team in the NFL for a large portion of the season. And then having the opportunity to do that AFC championship game here in Baltimore, something that had never happened, was one, an incredible honor and something that honestly rivals Super Bowl feelings for me, but also a bit unique because I'm coming back home and my 8-year-old's kind of crushed that they lost. So it was a fun ride.
your 8-year-old, my 14-year-old is suddenly a huge Ravens fan. So like, get me tickets. We got to go to games. Lamar this, Lamar that. What was your final takeaway about the Chiefs win, whether it be Andy Reid, whether it be Mahomes, whether it be Taylor Swift? What kind of resonates with you moving forward?
It's all of it, really. I mean, I would separate the Taylor Swift thing. It was a fun sort of side part to the season and part of the entertainment that I think we need to embrace as much as we possibly can. But I feel really fortunate to have been around Belichick and Brady when they were kind of at their, I would say, zenith in a lot of ways, where Tom was playing at his absolute best and Bill was doing what he does and finding ways to win games, building out an organization, building out a team. And look, I think Mahomes and Andy Reid aren't there. They probably won't get there because I don't think Andy Reid can coach as long as Bill did, and they can't have that relationship as long as those two did. But it really resembled it, Q, in a lot of ways. Just the fact that, not that winning becomes sort of just accepted and they don't need to put the work in, if you will, but there's this kind of inherent belief that like, oh no, we know what we're doing. We can find the little areas in the margins. They can win the margins. And Mahomes is just a special player in that way. And his mentality, as he's become more confident with the success that he's had, it marries his physical gifts. So it's this great kind of combination. And then you factor in, he's a brilliant guy, incredibly smart in his ways of sort of elevating his game mentally, which again resembles Brady, where Brady would describe it to you like, look, I have the answers to the test before this game or this test is even being delivered. And I'm starting to see that with Mahomes. And you saw it this season more than ever, to your question, and on this Super Bowl run, where they were challenged by maybe a lack of explosive playmaking on the outside, Travis Kelce having an up and down season, and man, Mahomes and Andy Reid and that staff and that defense really manufactured victory and an eventual Super Bowl.
Amazing what Mahomes did in my eyes. He was almost unsackable in the postseason. Very few mistakes. Negative plays were just not existing. Just moving the ball forward. Last thing about the NFL, are there lacrosse connections for you there? Obviously, Bill Belichick. Are there any other players or GMs or coaches who know of your background in the sport of lacrosse?
They do. And I mean, look, we all know about, yeah, Bill Belichick. And that was, I would say, helpful, to be fair. I mean, look, the Annapolis connection as well. Not that it, I always say, it never sort of opened up some door of access that others didn't have. But it, like most things in life, when you have a common connection, whether it's someone you know or a sport like ours, that in a lot of ways is still sort of finding itself on the national stage. And then you had your players like Chris Hogan and Jared Bernhardt. I never came across him in his time in the league. But what it did, Q, to your point, is as I've now become more established, just people know you more and they know your story. We all have a story. We all come from somewhere. We all have some sort of aspect in our background that kind of developed our personality, what we're about. And I think that more than anything in terms of the lacrosse football connection is whether it's other folks that do what we do, analysts, play-by-play people, or coaches and GMs and players, as we talk about our lives and I explain, oh yeah, no, I grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, played everything under the sun growing up, but I ended up playing lacrosse in college. Oh, where'd you go to college? Oh, I went to Delaware. Oh yeah, when were you there? Oh yeah, I was there when Joe Flacco was there. And you know, so it's these common threads. And the thing that I love about it is, once you say you played any sport, and I feel this way too, whether it was squash, lacrosse, basketball, like, yes, there's a different tier of exposure that comes with playing, you know, big time college football, big time college basketball, but there's nothing there. The differences aren't that extreme when it comes to the experience, the locker room, the demand, the discipline, all that required. So there is, I think, a level of respect that's given when you describe yourself as a college athlete and somebody who put in that amount of work at something.
Without question. Yeah. I sense that when they do realize that you were a college athlete, regardless of the sport, that you understand that there's investment. Like you, yeah. we see eye to eye in terms of sacrifice, work, investment. I want to spin it to March Madness because I saw you interviewing the giant from Purdue, and you looked like you were my height. I mean, I honestly hardly recognized you next to that guy.
Oh, I'm my like, goodness.
Wait a second. That guy's a foot taller than Evan.
It was unbelievable. And the better way to describe it, now the visual is always going to be the best, but the day before, so yeah, it was Saturday, we're having like our production meetings in the off day. So this is before the Elite Eight game, after the Sweet 16 game on Friday. And we had a little, you know, it was actually a pretty nice big green room at the arena there in Detroit. So we were having coaches and players come through from the final two teams, Tennessee and Purdue. And we had Matt Painter come through, and then we were going to have three of the Purdue Boilermakers come through, and including Zach Edey. And I'm sitting on a couch, and then we'd set up these chairs kind of in front of us for the players to sit in. I'm sitting next to Andrew Catalan, who's our play-by-play person. And I think, that was it. That was who was on the couch. And for whatever reason, Zach Edey decided, instead of just kind of walking in and just sitting down on the chairs in front of us, he kind of walked over us to get to the chairs. And the thing that struck me, Q, in the moment, one, yes, he's just huge, but like the body composition, it's all in proportion. He's done a really good job with his fitness and just, you know, putting his body together in a way where nothing's out of whack. But his arm struck me where it looked like, you know, the size of a 2x4. So then I'm immediately thinking, like, we've all played basketball. When you're just kind of in the mix, in the paint, you catch not just an elbow, but you might catch like a forearm. If you got hit with Zach Edey's forearm, it's my belief that it's like the scene in Tommy Boy where they're on the side of the road and David Spade just smacks Chris Farley across the face with it. I mean, it's that big. So yeah, it was an experience unlike any other, just sort of experiencing that level of size.
So basketball ends, you get home, take a big sigh of relief after quite a run, and now lacrosse starts. But before we go there, you've been coaching your son, Hudson, who's an 8-year-old. You just mentioned him. What the heck has that been like?
It's unbelievable, man. And I think we've either had conversations on or offline about it, but it's humbling. I'll say that it really, especially when you're coaching a sport that we feel like, and I feel confident, I know really well. I not only played it, but now I've been fortunate enough to call games at you know, collegiately a pretty high level for 10 plus years. So you're really in the minutiae, and you're talking to some of the smartest people in the sport, whether it be guys like you or coaches or some of the players. We've done so many years of the Pro League and the MLL. I mean, we've seen lacrosse at the highest level. So it just becomes kind of the common feeling of like, oh yeah, I know lacrosse. When you have to teach it from the foundation, from the base, it's extremely hard, and it challenges you to the point where I'm sort of uncertain at times. Am I saying the right thing? Where I've had to call buddies who are high level coaches, assistants at some of the top teams in the country right now, and go, hey, I'm talking to my son's team. I'm talking to, you know, they know Hudson. I'm trying to tell Hudson, you know, he's playing midfield. Like, what are some of the core principles, like spacing? What are landing spots he needs? And it's funny, Q, they have to think about it. Like, they don't have the answer because they're so far graduated from that. So it's been an incredible joy. I love it. It's like going in a time machine for however the time we're on the field, where I don't have to think about anything else. I'm so in the moment. And then you couple that with how quickly these kids can improve. If you teach them the right way to do things, they're so malleable. It's often how people describe learning a language. Like, if you want to learn Spanish or you want to learn French, you better start, or your best opportunity to really learn it, it's probably going to come in that sort of 8 to 10 range. So all that coupled with the fact that it's so frustrating sometimes, and I'll come away from practice going, I don't know if anyone got any better. I don't know what I'm doing. What I signed up for, but it's definitely addicting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned a lot of things there that hit me. You know, having helped out at Grace's high school this spring,
and she's playing goalie. Yeah. I hear. I was listening to the podcast.
Yeah, you know, she played. She retired at age 13 or 14 from gymnastics. So she played defense last year for the middle school team, having never picked up a stick before February. This year, she switches to goalie 2 weeks before the season. So there I am at Lax United running up a tab of $1,000 of goalie equipment. So she's the fourth stringer on varsity. They don't have a JV. And there was a time in practice recently where we had two of the goalies were hurt. And so she's like the backup. We play McDonough today. Oh, wow. And like, this is the highest level women's lacrosse league, girls lacrosse league in the country. But she's doing remarkably well in terms, you said, the improvement. I mean, I can see it week to week. I can see she's better each Monday and she's putting in the extra time. With the thing, the challenges for me, as you said, I have to learn women's lacrosse. So that's its own challenge. But just in general, when I coached at BL, like, you've got to relearn the game. And I always found that it made me, my analysis, my work on Saturdays, drastically better when you're in the game 3, 4, 5 times a week, times 2 hours at practice. It just makes you so aware of the nuances and details. Would you agree with that?
100%. And I knew we were going to have this conversation. The other thing that I'd love to hear your thought on is, it's made me rethink maybe what's important. And actually listening to your pod last week felt validating in a lot of ways, listening to Matt Carwick talk about their approach, their style. Because even at this level, so Hudson's 8 years old, he's playing, they call it, but they do it by grad year, which I still find confusing and somewhat odd. But, you know, he's a 2034. So for whatever that means. But I mean, again, we're talking like the youngest. And there's this idea that, you know, we got to find ways to get these guys in this position, or this is what we need to do against this team. And maybe it's also my own insecurities as a player. I don't feel like I had great stick skills. I relied on athleticism and sort of my basketball background as a defenseman. But to me, it's like we should just be doing catching and throwing and ground ball drills for the hour and a half we're out here. Like, that should be the whole practice, and like maybe some shooting here and there, because none of the other stuff matters if we don't do that. So, but just to circle it back to your point,
I completely agree with that. Yeah.
What's that?
No, I completely agree with that. Even at the high school level, like 1/3 skill development, 1/3 scheme stuff, whether it's picks, whether it's cutting, whether it's one-on-one defense, 2-on-2s, and then 1/3 play. That would be the minimum. And I could even turn up the skill development there. Again, as you said, if you can't scoop a ground ball, if you can't make clean passes, if you can't play fundamentally sound defense, none of the other stuff matters.
And bringing it back to the what we do and sort of evaluating, analyzing, trying to help viewers or listeners understand what's going on with a team, what's going on in a game, I've now been more emboldened to say, this is simply a team that's better at catching and throwing and moving the ball and doing the simple things at the highest level. And I can't remember what coach, I wish I could credit him. I feel like it was Denver. So it could have been Bill Tierney, but it's not, you know, critical in any way, but someone was saying the difference between the top five, you know, the teams that are top five in the country, maybe top 10, if you want to balloon it out a little bit, and the bottom quarter of top 20 or the, you know, is their ability to consistently throw the ball around the horn or past one another, not completing the pass, but completing it in a position where you can immediately make a play. So you're not catching it down here. You're not catching it over here. It's here every time. And the teams that can consistently do that repetitively and count on it in the most high pressure moments and at high level speed are the teams that are often in the top of the rankings. And I've just sort of taken, again, so coupling that, which I always thought was interesting, to my experience now being around people that are learning this sport and watching just really bad, like, let's be real, like when you're watching 8-year-olds, it's often bad lacrosse. And that's not being critical of them. It's just, it's not how the game necessarily will and should be played. But then there's these moments of brilliance where they do connect 3 passes in a row and you feel like you've witnessed a miracle. and it just, again, reaffirms that as much as it's fun to talk about and scheme and scouts and this and that, that at the core is what makes this game what it is.
The hardest part, and I agree with all that, the hardest part for me this year has been separating my journey, my history, my path from my daughter's, because they're very different.
Yeah, well, especially at that position.
and well, I mean, when you grow up and you're 3 years old in the backyard and your older brothers are shooting on you and you're playing for a team when you're in third grade, and you're you know, pretty fluent in the sport, so to speak, as a ninth grader compared to where she is as a first year player. So not to imprint my path on her path and kind of just let her path go where it wants to go. Like if she wants to go to school or she wants to hit the wall for an hour after the game today, fine. If she wants to stay late and do extra shots, I'm all for it. I will do anything to give her success, but it's got to come from her. Can't come from me.
If we're going too far down, you know, the personal route, we can, you know, buoy back, but like it is helpful for me to hear because I'm at the front end of this spectrum and I'm curious. I mean, I've heard and known about Grace for a long time, just working with you. But what was it that kept her away from lacrosse for all those years that now she has found? And again, it's almost as if she's not only found a sport that you have this love and connection to, but has like gotten as close to it, exactly what you did, as she can by playing, I would argue, the most challenging position in some way in sports, but especially in lacrosse.
Well, her path was, she was all in as a gymnast. It was, you know, 4 days a week times 4 hours. She medaled in the state meet. I mean, she won floor. She came in third in the vault. Like she was pretty high level, level eight, turning into level nine. And she had injuries and burnout, honestly. And so there was never any time really to get involved with lacrosse. She tried a camp once. She tried a little field hockey and just wasn't interested. And then suddenly that changed in eighth grade when she wanted to get away from gymnastics. But she said to me that she doesn't want lacrosse to become like gymnastics was.
Yeah.
And so there's got to be a push pull there between the parent and the child. What's best. The good thing about the goaltending position for me is we don't need formalized practice to work on our craft. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just the two of us. So we can go out and have a catch. I can go out and shoot on her and I can give her a lot of expertise in a short amount of time versus if she was an offensive player, it would be more requiring more team type practice to improve, I think.
Because I'm sometimes wrestling with you experience this from your time, not just covering the highest level of lacrosse, but let's be real, like you're in some of the buildings and rooms and weight rooms with some of the highest level college football programs in the country. I get that taste from the time I spend covering the NFL for 18 weeks and then the little time doing the college basketball in March. And what I found is it's reshaped because when I was growing up, it was kind of like, how are these guys there? And I'm here and I want to be there. And this is when you're at a young age. And I love my parents. They were great. They did everything I needed them to do, but they never had those answers. They were just sort of like, well, you go to the practice or you go to the team that's in your area or in your backyard. And all that worked out. And I had an incredible experience, but being that close to greatness all the time, literally every week, it's offered me, I think, a better understanding as to the how. So it does bleed into my, not necessarily my coaching to the team, but sometimes how I'm talking to Hudson about him wanting to be good at something or him wanting to be great or him talking about, oh, well, I'm going to go play at Delaware like you played at Delaware, those sort of things. And look, he's eight. I love it. It's great. I'm just enjoying him having those early thoughts. They could change tomorrow, but I can't help sometimes being like, all right, well, here's how that happens. And I've yet to reach a point where it feels like it's overwhelming, but I'm always very sensitive to the idea of not presenting too much or sort of pushing too much on them. Even though I know that when you kind of game the system, if you will, or understand the system and how growth happens and greatness happens, or at least very good happens, it really starts right now and it starts every single day in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and they have to love it. And what Grace loves about it is we're out there together. And as you said, in the moment, like the first practice I went to this year, they asked me to coach. The season was like a week or two in. It took a week to get fingerprinted by the FBI. And then I'm coaching. And that first day, I'm like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. Like there was no question about it in my mind, like that these are the best 2 hours that I'll spend of the day. Let's spin things forward. The Patriot League is crazy. And you're in the middle of it. We got six teams. We know that'll be in the Patriot League tournament. We have no idea the seedings. I tried to look at it today. It's like three pages of of tiebreaker stuff. But Army is at Loyola Friday night, 7 o'clock on CBS.
Yeah, I'll have that game.
Okay. Well, if you had to pick a favorite right now, would Army be the top at the top of the list?
Well, I would have said yes, and I think I said that Friday doing the Navy-Loyola game, but Will Coletti is banged up.
I saw that.
He didn't play in their game against Bucknell, and they were still really effective facing off. But he is, you know, as important to them being, I would say, a NCAA tournament caliber team, and doing the things they want to do, because not only can he face off real well, but man, he's as good a lacrosse player at playing that position as we have in the country, I think. So I'd have to have a better understanding of that. We haven't talked to Joel Barisi yet this week, so I don't know where that stands. I heard it probably, you know, allegedly could be a hamstring or some sort of muscle strain. So those can be both tricky, but also things you can manage. So I think I'll say Army with the caveat of, like, if Will Coletti's not playing this week and or next week in the Patriot League tournament, then I think it's open for interpretation. A prisoner of the moment, Loyola looked great against Navy. Their midfield started to produce in a way that we hadn't seen. They weren't exposed at the faceoff X, which I think has been a challenge. Luke Stout was back healthy, looked great. Their defense played well. I think they're as old a team as you'll find in lacrosse right now. I think Charlie was saying, I mean, they're around 20 to 22 senior, graduate, student level guys. And then the guy you had on the call or on the pod last week and what Colgate's doing right now, I think, are dangerous. But I'd probably, if pushed into a corner, would still say Army.
Yeah, it's pretty wide open. Bucknell's at Navy this weekend. BU's at Colgate. And if you know the way Colgate, if you listened to last week's podcast with Mike Carwick, fast and furious is the way Colgate plays. Well, BU plays pretty darn fast themselves, don't they? Yeah. I mean, they fly around. That game is going to be really fun to watch. Lehigh's at Lafayette. So we have
Lehigh's in a great position, Q, because is in a great position. I mean, they could, as much as I'm talking about Army and Loyola and then, you know, Colgate being what they are, and like, they play Lafayette, a game. I know it's a rivalry game, and Lafayette's proven to be everything you would or need to handle. But they should win that game, and they could be, when the dust settles, the team that's sitting in good position here.
Well, you got to head up to Cole Country then. Scott Cole Country, that is. question about the tournament. It's a Tuesday, Friday, Sunday format, or Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday?
Sorry, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday. Yep.
Tuesday, Friday. Teams who play in the quarterfinals, is there any track record that they've had success?
Not good.
It's not good.
And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know we've done it. It's always a team has made it to Sunday. I want to say Lehigh a few years ago, maybe. Has made it to Sunday, but I can only I can't remember a Tuesday team winning the Patriot League tournament. If they have, it's been once, twice at the most. So it's really rough. And then you factor in if you're a Tuesday travel team. So you went, say you're playing at the higher seed or the, you know, better team, if you will, on the road Tuesday, then do you go home maybe, and then you're back on the road to wherever the top seed's hosting it. It's challenging for sure.
It is. And coverage plans, are you televising both semi and final?
Correct. Yeah, it'll be me and our guy, Dave Ryan, Rhino. We'll have the semis on Friday and championship Sunday. I think coverage starts at 4 on Friday and back to back, basically. And then Sunday's at 1.
That's awesome. Last thing, who do you think would be the Patriot League Player of the Year right now? My vote would be Evan Plunkett. Do you think Will Coletti would be in the running there, too?
Plunkett's the best player in the Patriot League. I mean, Louis Perfetto for BU statistically is, you know, probably deserved. I mean, look, he is a fantastic player, him and Vince D'Alto. I made the point, it feels like they've been there for over a decade. And they're just piling up points and they've been extremely productive. So I think Louis Perfetto and his camp would have an argument that he should be in that running. But if it's in a vacuum of like who I think, whenever I'm watching, I'm like, man, Plunkett's he's a throwback, just kind of a special midfielder. Yeah, he'd probably get my vote.
I love that kid. How long will the commute to Loyola's Ridley Field take you?
So you asked about the tiebreakers. And look, I have no rooting interest. I truly don't. I root for good games. That's kind of how we're built in this business. But I do know that if Colgate's to lose to BU and Loyola beats Army on Friday, my commute the following Friday and following Sunday will be less than 10 minutes and will allow for some schedule flexibility on that off day Saturday to go do things that we started this podcast talking about, or we spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about, which is witnessing and help coach a big game against the Annapolis Hawks.
That hits hard. You probably know a lot of the little tykes on the Annapolis Hawks from your friends' kids, I would imagine.
There's one of the coaches is, remember Jake Baxter? Do you remember that name? I know he's an assistant at Jacksonville recently. It has been fun, Q. I can't remember where he played college. I know he went to sort of grew up around us, whatever. It's to your point, it's gone from, it's not only just the kids, but you'll be on the sideline and you'll see the name on the roster or whatever. And you're like, I know that guy. But it's funny. I think back to getting back into the Hawks thing. I remember in those MLL days talking to Cottle as they were kind of, you know, him and Hogan were building that whole thing out. And man, it's impressive. It's impressive. And they're good. They're good.
Last thing, NFL draft this week. Do you have any responsibilities?
I don't. I usually go, but because of the Friday game, the Loyola Army game, they weren't comfortable necessarily with me being in Detroit into Thursday and then having to hustle back and maybe not make that. So the draft is cool. It's an odd event to go to because I always joke. I mean, it has almost like a Super Bowl vibe in the city in terms of like how it takes it over. But there's no game. There's no ball. We're all here to watch, not even all of them, you know, 13 guys walk across the stage to shake the commissioner's hands in cool suits. So it'll be fun to consume over the course of this week, but I do not have any responsibilities.
Well, these next 2 weeks will be awesome. I'm heading down to Chapel Hill. I got Duke at Carolina. There's also a game on Virginia is hosting Notre Dame. And obviously you got the league tournaments that kick in. Your Blue Hens are right in the mix.
I was going to go to the game. I was going to take Hudson to the game Friday because that's a huge one. I mean, that basically is the game of the year in that league against Towson. But obviously there's a conflict. I did want to ask you just, I feel like we've had this conversation about the state of whether it's, well, it's more so the college game, but I went to a Towson game with Hudson's team early in the year. And then just, you know, as I'm always in sort of catch up mode once basketball ends, just the level of speed and explosive athlete that is now, I would say, more commonplace throughout rosters as opposed to the outlier within a roster. Like, oh, you know, I'm thinking whether it was when I played or first started doing this, there'd be like maybe 2-3 guys on a team where I go, wow, he is incredibly explosive, big, fast, strong. And then he was kind of surrounded by, let's say, you know, less imposing athletes, but great lacrosse players with incredible stick skills and awareness and all those things. Now it feels like that number has just gotten to be more where it's rather there's less kids that are leaning more on their lacrosse, you know, their ability to be special in other ways, as opposed to not only be great at the sport, but physically just blow by you.
At the Division I level, like you, for instance, you were athletic, you were tall. Now you're average, quite honestly. Yeah. Like now you walk out. No, I walk small. Out in the field.
I feel small when I'm around these. I'm the same size as I was as a senior at Delaware, same height, same weight, and I feel, you know, very less than a lot of ways.
Yeah. What I notice, you know, I feel my eyes, like when I watch Graham Bundy from Georgetown shoot pregame, or I watch Matt Collison of Hopkins or Garrett Degnan shoot from field level, it just blows me away. I'm like, wow, that
field level. I think that's the key.
Field
I
level.
Think everything gets, when you, some things when you, get lost in the, yes, the screen, field or level. Even the booth. field yes. level. It's
like, go down to the field. That's what I've been telling the PLL head coaches and GMs. Like, just go down to the field. When you see Kastner of Virginia, you'll say, that's a pro defender. You can feel it. You can see it. You know, the big guys are big and strong. The little guys got to be super fast. You've got to be able to do something really well at the D1 level. There's less 5'10", 180-pound stencils who are just good at everything. You know, everyone's yeah. got something. Everybody's got something they're really good at. And that's, to me, our eyes are our best. You know, it's people say, well, why are you down in the field pregame? It's essential. It's huge just to see body types, speed, the way guys move.
No, if I had the time to Q, I think I would, I don't know where it would exist, or maybe it would just be for my own edification, but it's like, I kind of want to know how these guys are built now. It just feels like the level of attention and commitment has created what I always wanted for the sport, where it's like, oh, it's not just like, you know, it requires more, I should say, than just your ability to maybe be from a hotbed. It requires you to bring a level of commitment to your physical makeup that I think is only enhancing the sport in so many ways.
Yeah. And sometimes I think from the booth we forget, and on TV, just the pounding, the shoulder to shoulder contact, the hip to hip contact, the slashing, like, again, being at a Loyola practice early in the season, I was like, oh, wow, that's right. You know, we're playing with sticks here. Like, you know, the ball's on the ground.
We've normalized those plays in between the restraining lines that are almost feel like some form of combat, where it's just bodies flying. I mean, that's one of the few things. I mean, I'm down on social media in a lot of ways, but I do appreciate that my algorithm will send me just play incredible effort plays on defense. The one that I showed Hudson, and I can't get enough of it. It was early in the year. I can't remember who it was for Virginia, but it was him just full on selling out like twice. And just, you know, those plays, another one that I think it was the Duke Notre Dame one, had one a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Parlett's play. Yeah. Go for the ground or got back to his feet.
Yeah. Like that. I'm excited about that becoming celebrated the way, you know, an incredible, you know, shot to the top corner is often, you know, kind of the default, or as much as I do love them when you yard sale somebody, but now it's like effort plays are getting it, their love.
The ones that I have to be careful, you know, the behind the backs, because for every behind the back successful shot, there's probably three or four that wasn't successful. And then kids like Hudson are out there doing it when they shouldn't do it.
You are 100% right. It's very much the, whether it, now it's the Caitlin Clark effect or the Steph Curry effect, like they all have their impact on whatever sport it is, where I'm like, hey, how about we get, you know, 100 in a row before we start doing that.
And that's tough to coach, especially when they make one in practice. So right. you have to celebrate it, but it's difficult. It's difficult. Well, Evan, thank you. Good luck in those games. I'll be on the road on Friday night, but I'll try to check in with that Army at Loyola game. It's important. The league is bonkers. We got a couple leagues that are bonkers.
It's been helpful. Yeah, I mean, you guys are always, you know, kind of my North Star on understanding what's happening while I'm away, if you will. And you're right. And I probably was getting ahead of myself because I hadn't done as much of a dive as I should. But it appears Patriot League's a one bid league. So like you factor that in. I mean, that level of desperation for a team like Army, team like Loyola, up and comer like Colgate with what they're doing, Lehigh. I mean, I don't think Rhino and I are going to be talking on Sunday about, well, if so-and-so doesn't win this game, you know, they're still getting in.
And you know, the irony there, Army beat Syracuse, Loyola beat Georgetown, Navy mm-hmm. beat Hopkins, Colgate beat Penn State. So it's not like the league doesn't have great wins.
No.
It's just that nobody has multiple great wins.
Yeah, it's what I'm sure I find exciting about the format of the NCAA men's lacrosse tournament, but also I'm as the sport, the more coaches we talk to tell us that it the depth in the talent is so deep and rich now based off so many kids playing it. it does present the argument that there are too many good teams being left out of May's tournament. And you know, that's a larger conversation for another day, I'm sure. And I'm not, again, versed well enough on it right now, but I do know that there's going to be a team, or there's going to be multiple teams in the Patriot League, to keep it in there, that aren't going to make the NCAA tournament, that could easily win a game, if not two.
Well, Evan and Rhino will have the call. It's Army at Loyola Friday night at 7. Saturday, I'll be down on the ACC network. We got Duke and North Carolina. Following that game, it is Virginia hosting Notre Dame. I believe that game's on ESPNU. And then the next week, we'll get into all our different conference tournaments where teams are battling for 9 automatic qualifiers. Championship week is awesome. So, Evan, give my best to Rhino.
I will.
And enjoy those games and enjoy coaching your son, Hudson.
Yeah, great, you too. Good luck to Grace and Cage. Great to catch up. And I'll see you back on the mic with Westwood for Champ Weekend. So we'll see you guys in Philly. Yeah. All right, buddy. Great.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you for tuning into today's show. You can contact me at quint.kesnick@espn.com with any feedback or guest ideas. And a special thank you to all our sponsors, including today's presenting sponsor, Spire Lacrosse.